speaking with me, Amy Beth. And we are joined by Elise Klein. She is the president, the head, the founder of Teachers Against Prejudice. She is also the president of Connecticut Teachers of English to Speakers of Other Languages. There's a big title. And director of Klein International Education Consulting. Elise will be presenting a discussion next week, November 8th, next Thursday already, at the YWCA here in Greenwich on the historic roots of prejudices and stereotypes. And this is a good time to talk about how we can diffuse some prejudices and make peace with each other. Elise, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Amy Beth.
It's a pleasure to have you here. It's certainly a relevant topic all the time, but in the last few weeks it has become ever more important, I think, to talk about how we can understand each other better and avoid these future conflicts, if at all possible. I guess we've been mulling this concept about how can we all get along for so many years now.
Well, I think we've been mulling it over, but we really haven't spent enough time discussing it. We may have mulled it over alone or with our best friend, but not in a dialogue.
Hold that thought. I'm going to interrupt you now. See, we're mulling it over and alone again for a second as we take our first peek at shadow traffic. I knew this would happen. Matt Ward has details. Good afternoon, Matt.
Good afternoon. Here we go. On to the roads.
And we are back, 1490 WGCH 411. You're talking with Amy Beth, and Elise Klein is here. We interrupted Elise. She's going to be giving this very informative, provocative talk on the historic roots of prejudice and stereotypes at the YWCA here in Greenwich next Thursday, November 8th. And we were talking, Elise, about the notion of the idea of thinking about people getting along. And you made a good point saying that, yeah, we've been thinking about it, but we really haven't actively, in concert with each other, maybe made an attempt to eradicate it, I guess is the...
Yes. And eradication is not even necessarily... I don't know if eradication is completely possible. That sounds like a utopia. But I believe that the first step is in recognizing our own prejudices, because we can't change anything until
we understand
that what we have and why we have it. And we need to examine it from that angle and try to figure out, almost to the degree of, where does it come from? Is it, in a sense, rational or irrational? Is it based on fear? Is it based on actual experience? Was that experience isolated? And instead of making generalizations for anybody based on an experience or on a history book or on anything else, we need to have those dialogues and get to know each other. Just like in Remember the Titans with Denzel Washington.
Great movie.
Yep, and that's what he did with his team.
Right.
Everybody was breaking down along racial lines. And he said to them, and it's a true story, so I really...
African-American football coach in Virginia in the early 70s, I guess?
Yeah, 1971, and the team was supposed to be integrated, as was the school. And there had been two teams, one white and an African-American, or at that time a black team, and they were forced to integrate. They didn't want to. And they set up their own barriers, let alone the obvious ones. And he said to them, you are to find out about your counterpart, what he likes, dislikes, what his mother does for a living, what his father does for a living. And I think that that's the gist, that's the core, because we don't know. And when you find out that, hey, you like that kind of music, or your father is, in this day and age, a mailman, you know, whatever, these are unified. You like bowling? We're both playing football.
Right, exactly.
And that's what we need to do. We need to have those dialogues, and I think all too often we avoid having them.
Come together with what brings us together rather than what divides us.
Exactly. And learn from what's different.
Yeah, you celebrate the beauty and the differences, sure, absolutely.
That's right.
But what about, where does it come from? I mean, as you point out, and it says that song in the South Pacific where they say you have to be taught to hate.
Yes.
When you're born, babies don't come with preconceived notions.
No, you don't.
It's obviously taught.
Mm-hmm.
Is it handed down from parents and their preconceived notions usually? Is it school? Is it neighborhood? All of the above, I guess.
It is all of the above. It's also, forgive me, the media.
No, absolutely.
It's houses of worship. It's experiences, it's your neighborhood, it's your friends. But, in fact, when I go into schools and talk with kids, whether they're middle school or high school students or university students, invariably what will occupy the first and second position of what causes people to have prejudices or to become prejudiced, parents and teachers are numbers one and two. And I think that's a powerful statement.
That's a very powerful statement. So what do you try to convey to other teachers? I mean, obviously your group is Teachers Against Prejudice, so you're trying to help teachers deal with their own prejudice first. That's the first
step,
right?
Yes. Well, we our approach is that we use film and television, real films and real TV shows, to be able to examine our own stereotypes. Now, I do a lot of teacher training and a lot of workshops. And very often, well, it depends if it's a workshop at a conference or in school. But if it's in a school, sometimes people don't think it's their place. Teachers don't think it's their place to bring up these kinds of issues, or they don't know how to bring up these kinds of issues. Or in fact, they've never looked at themselves before. So our approach is that you can't work with kids on such issues until you look inside yourself.
Now, aren't these issues talked about, I mean, especially now, we have character education, value education, social studies, English class, so I think that's something, I mean, I'm going back years when I was in school, we talked about those things.
Right. I know, I have a 14-year-old, he's in high school now, that they do talk about character building and about bullying in some places. You know, there are no universal standards or curriculums, and if you go from one town to another, from one state to another, from one country to another, they vary.
Sure.
But character building can be so simple as be kind to another person. Character building can be treat people nicely, but they don't really go into what that means. And depending on where you live and the people in your class, meaning your classroom, the people in your town, you know, they have wonderful programs in certain towns, border crossings and things of that nature, but kids have to volunteer for those programs. And so for those kids that participate in those programs, I'm sure that they gain a lot out of it. What I believe, though, is that every child, every teenager, needs to have the ability to work through their own thoughts and their own emotions and to develop critical thinking, not to swallow anything in its entirety, no matter what the source.
Good or bad, actually.
That's right.
So
that's right.
Even
absolutely.
If you say, you know, these people are good or these people are bad,
right.
You know, you need to really experience it in some way. And as you said, some people aren't even exposed to people with differences, you know, or different cultures or different backgrounds.
That's right.
It's kind of hard to avoid that, I guess, in certain areas because you do have different cultures. I mean,
absolutely.
I mean, we see different cultures all the time here. Now, you have to go out of your way to avoid it, I guess, in some cases.
And some probably do.
Some people probably do. Now, what about parents? Now, obviously, you don't deal, or you do sometimes deal with parents, right?
Well, many teachers are parents, first of all. And the other thing I will say is that we are Teachers Against Prejudice, and 75% of our members are, in fact, in the teaching profession. The other 25% are not teachers by profession. However, we are all teachers.
Good point.
And we all have the ability to affect those around us and what parents, how parents interact with their children, what the dinner time discussion is, the topics that parents avoid talking to their children about and or encourage their children to talk about. That sets a tone within a family and within a child's mind. And they take that with them for a very long time.
That's a great point. What do you think now, I mean, particularly since September 11th, where patriotic fervor is at an all-time high, do you see people, are we going to increase prejudice because we're thinking all those people are bad, or are we going to start thinking about building bridges and understanding the differences in these cultures and how we can better understand them so we can try to eventually get along?
I can tell you a personal story. My best friend's husband died in the World Trade Center tragedy. And both Nancy, this friend of mine, and her husband Alan are members. I prefer to use the present tense of Teachers Against Prejudice, although neither one of them are teachers per se. Nancy's mother, who lives in Florida, is 70 years old, and she called me up and she said, "How do I not hate?"
Profound question.
Profound question. We were on the phone for about an hour, and we saw each other about a week later, and I said, "I understand the sentiment." How can you not understand the sentiment? But you really need to look and say, who caused this? Not who caused this in terms of nations or anything like that. I do not buy into all this. But what I do buy into is individuals committed these acts. And individuals committed acts within our own country, such as Timothy McVeigh.
Yes.
And there may be other individuals in this country right now who are continuing other types of acts.
Yeah, we don't know what the anthrax scare is coming from.
I have my own opinion, but we don't know.
Right.
And what I'm saying is regardless of whether somebody's 20, 40, or 70, asking that question or bringing up that discussion gives one an opportunity to be able to say, yes, those people that did this are responsible. Those people that would follow in their footsteps are potentially responsible. But not everybody that has a certain skin color or has a certain native language is responsible any more than Christians years later are responsible for the Crusades, which we all tend to forget
sometimes. Absolutely.
Any more than Germans nowadays are responsible for what happened 60 years ago. We have to be able to differentiate. We can understand that we may have the emotion. It's not the immediate emotion. It's what we do after we've thought it through. So on a visceral level, we some people, certainly you went to Germany, we might touch on this.
6 years.
To try to figure out what happened in the Holocaust.
Right.
And there are people, certainly, who went through the Holocaust, or people who were Jewish today, whose family members may have, or just they
right.
identify with it, and they have a knee-jerk reaction to dislike Germans, even though,
that's right.
as you said, the vast majority of people who are in Germany now have nothing to do with it and really can't be held responsible for what happened all those years ago.
No, that is absolutely true, and I myself am Jewish, and when I decided to move there, I had all sorts of reactions from everybody. I knew, and I'm from New York, so trust me, it was a broad spectrum. And I did move there because I moved there to find out what happened. You could read as many books as you wanted to read, and there were no answers as to how this happened. And it's one of the reasons that I believe strongly in the danger of apathy, because what killed many of the people in the Second World War, what caused a lot of pain prior to and during the Civil Rights Movement, what caused pain in India often, was not hate, was apathy.
Mm.
People said they didn't want to get involved. You asked me a question before about parents and children. I can tell you that there are a lot of parents that either don't know how to talk to their kids about what's happened since September 11th, or think they shouldn't bring it up
right.
because their kids are going to get more worried. You know, these are natural reactions. The thing is that if you turn on the TV for 5 seconds, either you're going to have a newsflash coming across your child's favorite show, I mean, unless they're 3 years old,
right.
kids are going to be discussing it. If, and I hope that most families do get the newspaper, whatever paper it is,
sure.
it's across every headline, and it's in the whole first section of whatever newspaper it is. So kids are getting the information.
You can't totally avoid it.
You can't totally avoid it.
You can limit the, I think, and it may be healthy, and we talked about this, to limit the exposure both to kids and to adults, because you can drive yourself nuts with the saturation.
You absolutely can, but you cannot limit what goes on in somebody's mind.
True.
And if you have an atmosphere where you can just simply ask if President Bush was on TV, what'd you think? You can watch with your child for 5 or 10 minutes.
Great idea. Right.
And I think that that's part of it. We avoid that type of responsibility.
Because we just don't want to upset them.
We don't want to upset them.
Right.
We also don't want to upset ourselves.
Well, that's all complicated, right?
Right.
But everybody's upset anyway, so you're right. You should try to deal with it head on,
mm-hmm.
which is the whole issue of prejudice and trying to understand. But do you see people, I mean, certainly, I personally, fortunately, I don't know of any cases around here where we've seen people being targeted, but we've heard of cases throughout the country of these horrible, vigilante-type actions against people of Arab descent or who they thought were Arab descent.
Sikhs, which are not of Arab descent.
Who are not, have nothing to do with it. You know, just because they look a little different or because their names are, sound Arabic or whatever. And that's just outrageous. Do you see with that? I mean, that's not happening across the board,
right.
thank God.
Right, right.
And certainly President Bush, give him credit, I think has come out with saying, taking a stance as a national spokesperson that we really can't do this.
It's
the wrong thing to do. And his campaign, I'm not sure if it's effective or not, about collecting a dollar from every kid to send to Afghanistan. Where is that money going?
Right, right. Sure. Well, we're going to have a whole discussion about where all the money's going lately. But
yeah, I'm not so sure I'm keen on that, but I understand what the sentiment is
right.
and the idea that maybe this is a way to break down barriers and to say, it's not the Afghani people. Those people are poor people who are being persecuted on all fronts.
And we didn't pay enough attention to them for the last 5 years because women have been persecuted in Afghanistan for at least the last 5 years, and we didn't seem too concerned about it back then.
Exactly. So, there's lots of blame to go around and lots of hindsight and all of that, but what is your sense? I mean, when you're talking to people,
mm-hmm.
you talk to people from different countries.
Absolutely.
What do you feel? Are people becoming more prejudiced or less prejudiced or more open? Or
no, I don't think they're becoming more prejudiced. And compared to a lot of countries, I think, first of all, we have a very open society, and people are able to express their opinions both in the positive sense and in the very subjective negative sense, shall we say.
Sure.
And I don't think that there's necessarily more prejudice. I don't think you can make people prejudiced overnight either. I also think that many people don't know. You said we were talking about Sikhs versus Arabs, but you can also say Arabs and Muslims. A lot of people
are Christian
think
Arab,
that
yeah.
they're all the same thing, and they're
right.
not. And I also think that the President's initiative is wonderful. I think the President's initiative should be across the board. I understand his desire at this point to call attention, to not being prejudicial towards Arabs and or Muslims. By the same token, though, I think that he should even come out stronger for all people, not to be prejudiced towards whether it's homosexuals, and which he has not come out so much about in the last 7 or 8 months, 9 months, I should say. I think what he's saying is very, very important, and I think the American people do hear him, as do people around the world. That's the other reason he's doing what he's doing. It's not only for the sake of the American people. But I also think that it would be very simple, really, for mosques to team up with community centers or with other houses of worship or with colleges or universities. I think sometimes we don't hear a lot from certain communities, and especially at this time, I think it would be very important to be able to do so. You know, there are talk shows all over the place, and you hear a lot of different viewpoints, but that is not a place where you can really ask them questions yourselves. And I think that the nation could do more on local levels
to build those bridges.
To build those bridges, because I don't think you build those bridges overnight. So suddenly anybody coming out and saying something is not going to suddenly build a bridge.
I mean, do you sense that there's a hesitancy on the part of the Muslim community to reach out? I mean, I think there's some that have. I think I saw something.
Oh, no, there's there. I mean, it's like, but that's the whole thing, right? Generalizations.
Right, exactly. Here we go.
Sorry. Now, obviously, there are individuals that have. There are communities that have. It's like anything else. But I think there are communities that are fearful. On both sides, I would probably say.
Sure.
And I think we need to step outside ourselves a little bit more and say, you know, we occupy the same space. We are in the same country. This country was founded, regardless of where your parents or grandparents or great-grandparents, there are very few of us that can say that we didn't come from someplace else.
Sure.
And put ourselves in those positions and in those situations and say, we all have the right to worship, if we worship at all.
Right.
As we see fit. We all have the right to live in whatever area we want to live in. And we need to look a little bit at that also and see, you know, where do people live? Are we all integrated? Why or why not?
Good point. I mean, it's interesting because we think of America as, you know, a bastion for everybody, and compared to other countries, we are. But on the other hand, we do build up our own little walls and our own little communities sometimes. And prejudice certainly has flourished in this country, and we have a lot of black eyes going back to slavery, going back
absolutely
to what happened in World War II with the
Japanese Americans,
going back to, I hate to bring this up, but, you know, giving smallpox laced blankets to the Indians.
Right.
You know,
oh, absolutely. I was just in Alaska in August, and we talked about that too.
Absolutely. So, I mean, there are, you know, certainly it's a country of contradictions.
Mm-hmm.
We stand for freedom, we stand for all of these wonderful liberties.
Right.
And we do have them, but on the other hand, we've also had an undertone of things that are not so tolerant.
Absolutely, and I think that that is pretty much what would happen in the society that we live in. We have the freedom to do so much, and we also have the freedom to close our eyes and turn away. And
the flip side of freedom.
Right, and actually I've been amazed at the world in the last 9 months, because prior to September 11th, we had been walking away from the ABM Treaty. We had been walking away from the Kyoto Accords. We had been doing a lot of walking away, or walking in our own direction, shall I say, as a country, or as representatives of our country. And I have been pretty amazed at how the world has attempted to unite since September 11th to try to fight terrorism, because really it leads one to wonder, prior to that we were on our own, but by choice.
Because of course you could argue, and this is a whole other discussion, though,
sure,
that we, you know, maybe we had it. We just, it's time for us to take care of ourselves, and now we realize,
sure,
that
we're going to have a definitely long discussion,
yeah,
on that one.
It's a global, I mean,
that's
it,
right.
You know, it's short-sighted. I would agree,
mm-hmm,
that it's short-sighted, but I can understand where some of the motivation may have come from. And
oh, absolutely.
And even now, with some of the tenuous relationships that we have with some nations, we give aid to everybody. You know, you always wonder, you know, giving aid to people who hate us.
Right. Or attempting to give aid. We're not even sure if it's getting where it's supposed to be going.
Well, yeah, so the dropping of the food and all of that. Yeah, you know, it's... that's another conundrum, which I'm not really sure. I think if it's getting to the right people, it's certainly the right thing.
Absolutely.
If it's not, that's a problem. Hang on a second. Hold
sure
that thought. Elise Cline, a fascinating discussion. She will talk more coming up, of course, next Thursday at the YWCA, the Roots and Prejudice and Stereotypes. First, though, we must take a quick break for Shadow Traffic and the news. Time for Matt Ward now. What is happening, Matt?
Well, it looks like what's happening right now is the Turnpike North.
1490 WGCH. Welcome back. You're talking with me, Amy Beck, 434, and we're talking with Elise Fine, who is the, you have so many titles here, Elise, the founder and president of Teachers Against Prejudice. She'll be giving this provocative talk. I'm sure it will be fascinating. On next Thursday, November 8th, at the YWCA on the Historic Roots of Prejudice and Stereotypes, if you'd like to join the conversation, feel free to do so at 203-661-5050. It's live and without a wire, so I always take my chances when I do this, Elise, but we'll try it. Good afternoon. Welcome to the show.
Hello?
And of course, we have to wait a few minutes for the phone to click. Here we go.
Hello?
Good afternoon.
Amy, it's Chief Robbins.
Hey, Chief Robbins. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
I'm doing just fine. We are actually currently in the middle of another interview.
Oh, okay.
Can we talk to you a little later this evening, like 6:10? Or how about tomorrow?
How about tomorrow?
I'll call you during the day, okay?
Okay.
Terrific.
Thank
you.
Bye-bye.
I told you it's... live without a wire, but Chief Robbins is going to talk to us about this whole onslaught of people getting guns, applying for gun permits. That has been a tremendous increase since the September 11th, and there's a concern that people are going to have widespread panic. Now, why do you need a gun? The Taliban certainly is not going to come to your door. I mean, that's my...
No, and actually, I mean, studies have proven, actually, that if somebody owns a gun, the likelihood that they will be a victim of gun violence is much higher, and the likelihood that their family would be affected is much higher.
That's my concern. But I guess some people have this notion that widespread panic will ensue if they're looting. I just think if something horrible happens, we've already seen something horrible happen on September 11th, and people pulled together in a remarkable way.
I mean, there was almost no looting in New York. I mean, I spent weeks in New York after, and that was not what was happening. So if residents or local residents think all of a sudden that Greenwich is going to be looted, I'm wondering who they think was in Greenwich, because it didn't happen in New York where
right. Everybody
lives.
Exactly. So that's what I'm wondering and I'm concerned with. But I guess, you know, again, people react differently, or they just feel we have to be safe. But I don't know how getting a gun is going to make you safe, but that's another topic.
I wish you and Chief Robbins a lot of luck.
Well, we'll see. Anyway, at least getting back to what we were talking about. Now, talk to us a little bit briefly, if you have, you know, we don't have that much time left, but you went, we mentioned, you ventured, it was 17 years ago, to Germany?
Yep, about 1984, 17 years, that's right.
You decided to go over there to really get a handle on the Holocaust and when it occurred. And what did you find, I mean, when you went over there? You lived there for 6 years?
I lived there for 6 years. Mm-hmm. I was married over there. My son was born there. I went there because no matter what I read, I couldn't quite understand how a whole country had gone nuts. Nothing that I read, not novels, not historical facts or literature, had clarified it for me. I thought the only way I was going to find out was to go move over there, which is, I'm sure, why everybody moves to a different country. But while I was there, I asked a lot of questions, and people asked me a lot of questions, which was probably one of the most fascinating things that happened, was that people were asking me, Germans were asking me why the Holocaust happened, because
wow,
their parents and their grandparents would not talk with them about it. And that was one of the first clues that I got, was that people weren't forthcoming. People, whatever role they played or didn't play on the sidelines, so to speak,
sure,
people weren't willing to talk about it. And what I found out was actually the truth, was people forgot or have forgotten that Hitler was elected. He did not suddenly come and take power. Now, one could look at the Treaty of Versailles and how Germans were feeling at the time, and we can look at history and look at scapegoating and a lot of different groups that have gotten affected by scapegoating. But you have to ask yourself, how was it that thousands of books were burned? How was it that stores of certain groups were broken? Where was everybody? Back behind their own curtains. I'm not saying that they were the ones that were burning the books and they were the ones that were breaking shop windows, but they were witnesses to it, and they didn't do anything.
They just closed their eyes.
They closed their eyes.
Not my business.
That's
don't
right.
Want to be involved.
That's right. And that is the danger. They reached a certain point where nobody probably could have done a thing to stop. It's kind of like a tidal wave or a snowball coming down a mountain. But there were certainly ample opportunities, but people did not want to get involved.
And, of course, on the other hand, there were some people, a minority of people, that did get involved and really put their own lives on the line.
Absolutely. There were certainly people like that, and we honor them to this day in the United States and in other countries. They were incredible people, much like the firemen that ran up, and the EMS workers and the police officers that ran up the Twin Towers, as opposed to everybody else going down the Twin Towers. Of course, there are heroes. There always are. And there are always people that people have to save because of the other people that tried to destroy.
The nefarious ones.
Right.
Right. And then, as you said, the vast majority of us are in between somewhere.
That's right.
And you want to work on those. Both of us who are...
I want to open minds. I don't want to change minds, but I want to open minds. I think people need to look.
to see why things happen and why they feel the way they feel.
And what role they play, because if you keep your mouth shut, you play a role. If you look at the movie Gentleman's Agreement, 1947, oldie but goodie.
Gregory
Peck.
Part of it,
yeah, Gregory Peck, Darianne. Took place around here. 51 years later.
Yeah.
Or 54 years later, excuse me. What do you do if somebody tells a joke? Do you stand there and listen to it? Do you walk away? Do you say, I don't want to hear it? And a matter of fact, for our essay contest this year, the essay question has to do with jokes. And does humor, do hearing jokes, do jokes on TV or in film, encourage stereotypes and prejudice?
That is what we call in the business a great segue, Elise. Segue into your own film, your own plug for your contest. We didn't mention you do have it. It's an annual contest.
It is an annual contest.
For Teachers Against Prejudice.
For Teachers Against Prejudice.
And who is it open to?
We sent out letters to all administrators, principals in all middle schools and high schools in the state of Connecticut, public, private, and parochial.
Okay.
So either every secretary of a principal in Connecticut got the letter, or hopefully every principal got the letter. And it's an approved contest. It's approved by the state. Last year we had about 300 essays.
How do you get a contest approved by the state? Is there like a state contest commission?
Yes, there actually is, because they want to track which essays are going into the classroom. Last year's contest was phenomenal. It was about the role of film and television. This year is about jokes and humor in film and TV.
Right.
And we are have been having an outpouring of teachers calling up. The rules are 300 words or less, and are 320 acceptable and things like that. But what they're talking about is what a wonderful opportunity it is for them to talk with their kids, with their students, about stereotypes and prejudice. I had students last year that I met in Wilton, in West Hartford, in Fairfield, that had told me that the way they look at the TV shows that they watch, but the way they look at the movies that they go to see now, has forever been altered, because now they're thinking, what are the messages that I'm getting?
Great. So that's what you're talking about when you say you want to open up the mind.
That's right.
So that you're critically thinking, you're
that's
watching
right.
things, you're looking at things differently.
That's right.
And then you're turning it inside and inward and saying, well, why do I think this way? Why do I feel this way?
Absolutely right. So it's very timely, unfortunately. Very important. And we also opened it up. Our members are all throughout the world, actually. We have members in Brazil, in Canada, in Japan, in Korea. I'm going to forget somebody. Germany, France. And we also opened it up this year to our member schools, wherever they are. We are a completely volunteer organization. We do everything we do because we believe strongly in it. We run nature and human nature walks, showing the symbiotic relationship between plants and animals. And if they can get along so well, why can't we?
Great idea.
And we do in-service workshops at schools. And we've been to the sickle cell walkathon up in Bridgeport. We were there with the Urban League Barbecue. We go wherever we're asked to go. Pete Seeger Clearwater Festival in New York.
Oh, yes, right.
So we go wherever we're invited and wherever we're asked to speak or to display our materials.
Terrific. And you will be here next week, we should mention, in Greenwich.
Absolutely. In Greenwich at the Greenwich YWCA at 6:30. For about an hour. And
we're going to give a spiel, a lecture.
I'm going to give a spiel. I'll give both a spiel and a lecture, depending on who's there.
And then you'll have a Q&A, I guess.
Yes, there'll be a Q&A, and I'll be around for a bit. And I should say that if anybody wants to contact me, the email address is taporg, T-A-P-O-R-G, at AOL.com.
Taporg. No spaces at AOL.com.
Yes, absolutely.
Right, so people can find out more about the contest.
The
deadline is December?
December 1st.
December 1st. And kids need to get it via their school?
No, they do not.
Okay.
We actually got our first essay a couple weeks ago, and it was by itself. What we asked the principals is you don't have to put it into your LA class or your social studies class. Let the kids know that the contest is available for them. One of our honorable mention high school students last year came from Harding Health Magnet in Bridgeport. She was the only person who wrote in from her school. She did it on her own. She took the initiative, and it was phenomenal. And I should tell you that all the essays from last year's essay contest are available on our website. So if people are interested, because the website's a very long address, they can send me an email, and I'd be more than happy to provide them with the website.
Terrific. Well, so you have all this stuff set up. How many essays did you get last year?
About 300.
Wow.
But this year we're expecting about 3,000.
Now, who? Well, that's optimistic, at least.
No, we've heard.
Now, what is who judges it? You're sitting there reading all of them, or you have a committee?
Last year, the board read every single one of them. This year, what we've done is we've asked our members if they would like to read some of them, too.
And we will be sending them out to different parts of actually the country, and a couple of people in other countries will scan them in for them because they want them, we want them to be able to participate.
Sure.
And to be quite honest, it's not the grammar that we're looking for, although I'm an academic director and teacher. We're looking for their heart.
It doesn't take up the whole thing, yeah.
Right. What have they learned? How do they demonstrate? How do they visualize? How do they demonstrate what they've learned and what they've seen?
And the question is, how do jokes and humor...
How do jokes and humor influence your feelings on stereotypes and prejudice? Do they? Do they have an impact? Would you please cite an example from a TV show or a film?
Great. And that's a great thing
your argument
key into, because certainly young people, all of us, are affected, as you mentioned, by the media and entertainment and bombarded by images. And how does that seep into our psyche in a way that we're not even aware of?
Absolutely. I mean, we even use films when I do workshops, such as X-Men.
Hmm.
We were talking about Remember the Titans before, or Remember the Titans is phenomenal. There are so many films out there, Finding Forrester, Shrek is a really, really good movie to use in something like this, and for adults as well as for children. So there's a lot of films out there. Bye Bye Birdie, Prejudice Against Teenagers.
Well, yeah, teenagers, we talk about this in this show, teenagers sometimes do get a bad rap, and I'm always a champion of some of the young people we've had in here who are remarkable and doing wonderful things.
It comes up a lot in the workshops, actually, but the prejudice against teenagers, you know, we tend to see prejudice sort of in black and white, or in clearly defined racism, anti-Semitism, but there are a lot of different kinds of prejudice, socioeconomic.
Sure. Well, you talk about ageism, you talk about teenagers, you talk about the elderly.
Absolutely,
well,
absolutely. Move to Japan, find out how they're revered.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a lot of different body image.
Yeah, well, you mentioned that before. Yeah.
Right.
People think, some people think that, you know, fat or being overweight is the last group that you can make fun of.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, so it's just as easy as, you know, buying a Weight Watcher Smart One and getting a Bowflex, I think we'd all be then, you know?
Maybe, maybe not, because we'd be free to choose, which we still are.
Right, but, yeah, you know what I mean.
I do.
But it's fascinating. The topic is endless. I don't know if you can do it all in 1 hour or 1.5 hours.
No, usually you need 2.5 to 5.
Years, decades, centuries, what's
right.
But certainly it'll be a lively one because our discussion here has been so lively. Elise Cline, this coming, do we need reservations? This coming next Thursday, a week from today, November 8th, at the YWCA, the Historic Roots of Prejudice and Stereotypes. I guess call for reservations.
You can call for reservations. We'd love to have you. We'd love to have your participation during Q&A, and we'd love to have you listen also, whatever anybody feels comfortable with.
And you can call the Historical Society at 203-869-6899. Extension 10 gets you the information and tickets. It's 869-6899. Ask for extension 10, and it's going to be a lively conversation, I can tell. By the preview that we've gotten here already, at least, you're doing some very important work. We wish you the best. Your projects are endless. I know you're doing conferences. You have a big one this weekend, right?
Yes, Teachers of English to Speakers of Other Languages. Connecticut TESOL has a big conference, the annual conference up at Naugatuck Valley Community College, and I'm headed up to Waterbury tomorrow.
So
just got back from Maine and from another conference, so it's important, and I thank you so much for the opportunity to be able to speak with you and to talk with your listeners.
It's a pleasure, Elise Cline. Thank you so much for joining us here. 1490 WGCH. Stick around. We're coming back.